And looking ahead a little further in the Proms diary, the concert on Sunday evening will be given by the Dallas Symphony Orchestra with its music director, Andrew Litton. He's already well known in this country from his time as principal conductor of the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra. Andrew Litton was in the country earlier this year, and I took the opportunity to talk to him about his new orchestra. Andrew, you were appointed to the orchestra in 94, so that's 3 years now. How's it going?
It's going really well. Coming from Bournemouth, as I have professionally, it's such a different experience being music director of an American orchestra because, as I quickly discovered, the job description entails a lot of extracurricular activities besides just the music making. And as you know, in this country, when one is principal conductor, one just chiefly really attends to the music making. I'd say the music making part of my job in Dallas is maybe 35% to 40%, believe it or not. And the rest of it is administrative, fundraising, big underlining on that one, and lots of daily bureaucratic things. For example, if a player wants a raise, they come to me. If there's a problem with a player, they come to me.
You're the man.
There's all sorts of weird and sort of frightening responsibility that goes with the job, but the good part of it is that when things go well, you can take full credit, and that's really kind of exciting, and they are going well.
I mean, I remember you in Bournemouth as being unusually ready, shall we say, to go out and shake some hands and appear at parties and so on. But as you say, that kind of social side must be a major part of your duties in Dallas.
It is totally, because we rely almost 100% on the goodwill of our patrons. We get no money from the government at all. I mean, pocket change. So we, first of all, are very lucky in that we sell out on subscription. We've actually sold out for 8 years in a row, and hopefully by the time this is broadcast, I can say 9 years in a row. We're well on the way to the ninth year. And what this means is that...
Is that literally... I mean, does that mean if somebody turns up at the hall on the night, they can't get a ticket?
Or? You turn up, call me, I'll get you in. No, it does theoretically mean that. But what happens is that people in Dallas very often will buy a season subscription, and then because, you know, something's going on at one of the kids' schools or they have a trip or whatever, they don't show up. So we actually sell general admission seats at the door, and we do very well because we actually can double sell. It's like airlines do, deliberate overbooking, but we actually need this income. It's absolutely essential to our existence, and so it's a big challenge as a music director to program a season with this kind of expectation. Obviously, being adventurous is a very risky business. So one little bit of heat that I sometimes take from our local resident press is, you know, when are we going to hear some more far-out music? And the thing that I keep trying to do is actually present music that is not well-known, but certainly accessible. In my first season, we did some works by Korngold, which, you know, no one had ever heard there. I actually did the first Dallas performances of the Rachmaninoff Third Symphony, if you can believe it, a work that's done every season by every orchestra in this country.
An American piece.
Exactly. So there are many wonderful areas of the repertoire that have not been experienced that are unusual and yet not scary.
Andrew, I suppose we all have our idea from television about what your subscribers look like, probably completely false. But, I mean, we know that it's a very well-off community. But what about the wider community? Does the Dallas Orchestra do the sort of work that the Bournemouth Orchestras became famous for, of going out and working in schools and so on?
It's actually been my basic platform since I've been there. We call it the education reign, reign of education, not only for kids, though. We've been blessed, as I mentioned, with this sell-out audiences, but very often our audiences are slightly embarrassed as they will come up and confess to me that they maybe don't know as much as they should about music. So I, in my first season already, started talking from the stage, not every night, Lord knows, and also not before every piece, but whenever there was something unusual. Now, the very first time we played that Korngold, it was on the second half of the program. And especially on a Thursday night, we play four times a week, by the way, in our hall. Dallas is a very early to bed, early to rise, town. I mean, the work day actually starts at 8 for most people, which means they're in the health club at 6. You know how it is. That means that, you know, when you've got a concert starting at 8:15, which ours did up until this year, and you finish by 10:30, very often on a Thursday night, the hall would sort of empty out very casually through the second half. And I was a bit worried that when they saw in the program this strange Korn Gold, that they might flee. So in the first half, in the best Hollywood tradition, I did actually a preview of Coming Attractions, and we played them a bit of that actual trio. And I said, now, this is what you'll hear if you stay. And they loved it, and they all stayed. And I got letters afterwards saying, thank you, we were planning on leaving. So occasionally it really pays off doing this. Now, with the kids, this has been such a complete and total obsession with me, because the whole reason why I'm a conductor is because when I was 10 years old, I went to young people's concerts in New York that were then conducted by Leonard Bernstein. And throughout my life, I've always vowed that I would repay that debt somehow, that, you know, maybe some other little kid sitting in an audience of a children's concert I was conducting would be so inspired. And so as soon as I got to Dallas, I started going to the board and saying, we've got to start these televised young people's concerts again. They made such a huge impact on kids of the 60s that it would be great if we could get this stuff back on TV again. And we, in fact, did that. We filmed 3 young people's concerts, although we're not allowed to call them that. The Bernstein Estate has that one sewn up. So we call them Amazing Music. And we filmed, as I say, 3 of these shows. This coming September, we're doing 2 more. And they're basically a music appreciation for kids of the 90s. We do much shorter sound bites, if you will. There's lots of visual stimulus as well. For example, in the first show, we used a snippet of a Tom and Jerry cartoon, and there are monitors all over the hall as well, so that the kids in the hall can see this and show how silly it is without music and how much more appropriate it is seeing this cartoon with music. And then, you know, that's sort of the premise for the whole show. Mm-hmm. So we have lots of fun with these. I also have little kids come up and conduct the orchestra. That actually visually makes the best television, because it's the cutest thing you've ever seen. And so it's a big project and something I'm very much involved with in Dallas. Another thing that I do is go out to the schools myself. For example, just last week I worked with what we call middle school, which is 7th and 8th grades in the States, a string orchestra. And they were wonderful. Most of them are minority kids. And it's just so exciting. Even if 1 or 2% of these kids go into music as a profession, just the fact that they've experienced so much of it already makes them so much more well-rounded and also builds our future audience. So it's sort of serves a multitude of purposes to reach out like this.
And I suppose another way in which you relate to the community is with your chorus, big chorus, but it's all amateur, isn't it?
That's correct. It's 240 strong, and it is such a joy working with them. They're just terrific. As I always tease my orchestra, because they always laugh at my jokes, and the orchestra's sitting there sort of, you know, ha-ha, right?
Well, the orchestra's probably heard them before.
Yeah, well, I guess, yeah. But they are a lot of fun to work with, and they are also brilliant, and we really do. I always apologize to the chorus for abusing them, because, you know, obviously they're volunteers, and I just want to use them again and again and again, because I do think they're one of our great assets.
And we've talked about some of the differences and some of the similarities between Bournemouth and Dallas. We haven't yet mentioned the hall, which is a big one.
Actually, I don't think you can draw any analogies between Bournemouth and Dallas there, maybe between Birmingham and Dallas, but the hall, of course, is acoustically designed by the same gentleman who did the Symphony Hall in Birmingham, Russell Johnson, a genius, if there ever was one, certainly, as far as the world of acoustics go.
Does it have the same kind of variable acoustic that Birmingham does?
Extremely variable. In fact, in some ways it has more bells and whistles, just because, well, I guess I can be fairly crass and say that the Texans spent more money. It really has a great amount of versatility, and in fact I'm still experimenting and playing with it. It's like having this fantastic toy, because